Welcome to Nocturnal Journal, sitting in for Justin Kaufman and the Download tonight. We're going for a full 4 hours. Later on, we are going to pay tribute to our favorite restaurant in Chicago, La Scarola, with a live performance from Tony Ocean. We're going to celebrate Halloween with the Project Onward Band. They're going to do a couple songs, including, I'm really excited to hear their version of Werewolves of London. We're going to have an interview with Pat Boone that we're setting up right now in conjunction with the 20th anniversary release of his metal album. And also later, joining us later is the entire Prine family, but in the studio with us right now is Mr. Billy Prine, a regular, along with Tony Fitzpatrick, on the show. Thanks, Billy. Thanks for...
It's great to be here, Dave. Always, always great to be at WGN. Yeah. I was hoping that Pat was going to be here.
Pat Boone?
Because of all the stars I've never met, he's top of the list, so... You know, but I'm a little disappointed, but not that much.
Did you ever hear his metal album?
One song. I heard Crazy Train.
Yeah.
The Aussie Train. Yeah. And, my nephew is actually a big fan of that record, of the Pat Boone record.
You'll hear him talk about it. He, you know, it's hard for me to tell that, I mean, he was kind of half kidding, but I think maybe he started it as a joke, and I think he really kind of liked it, you know? I mean, he did these big band arrangements and stuff, and, you know.
And apparently it was a best-selling record he had in like 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it came out in 1997, and there was stuff happening after that. We were talking, I think, Stephen Eady did, there was a whole compilation called Loungepalooza, and they did Soundgarden song.
I never knew that.
Yeah, Black Hole Sun and stuff like that. So that was happening back in 1997. Tell me the story. You're going to play a little bit later on the show, but tell me the story about Pat Boone and Cowboy Jack. Tell the listeners who Cowboy Jack
is. Well, there's a late, great Cowboy Jack Clement. It was a legend in his own time, for sure, a true artist. You know, discovered Johnny Cash. He worked for Sam Phillips for
Sun
a number
Records,
of years.
Right.
Sun
mm-hmm.
Records. He was a guy that was there. They had Jerry Lee Lewis and his father, Elmo, drove up in a pickup truck from Faraday, Louisiana. They saved egg money for gas. Oh. And Jerry Lee said, I play piano like Chet Atkins plays guitars. And Jack said, I got to hear this guy. So he taped it. And, of course, you know, the rest of that story. But the house that Jack built a studio and he bought from Pat Boone in the 60s.
I never knew that
Which
story.
Turned into the Cowboy Arms Recording Spa and Hotel. And it was really a great place, you know.
Describe it for the listeners. I mean, yeah, I was there a couple of times. I did a story on Cowboy Jack, so I hung out there for a day with him.
Kind of like an ornate bungalow, nice piece of property, huge yard, huge backyard. The studio was upstairs. For a long time, they had the control room downstairs and the studio upstairs.
Yeah.
So that was a little different, you know. But John, my brother John, cut a few things there. A lot of people did music there. Oh, Johnny Cash used to stop in and do a few things. And it was a great hangout place, too. You'd go in Jack's office and you'd see, like, Marty Stewart and, you know, just all kinds of different, you know, musicians, you know.
In recent days, I mean, I think I've talked to Pat McLaughlin about this, and we can talk about who Pat is. But there was a sound that came out of that studio, and I don't know, it was... You know, I mean, it was kind of a strumming sound, kind of a. I don't know if Ben Keith. I don't have any notes in front of me. Did Ben Keith hang out there and stuff? And,
yeah, all those guys.
And Jim Rooney.
Jim Rooney.
Yeah, right.
Jim Rooney. They had like a house band for a while of a great drummer named Tony Newman and a guitar player named Philip Donnelly, who played with John for a number of years, and Jay Patton, great sax player, has been with Crystal Gayle for like 40 years now, but. It was a small studio, but sure. It had a good vibe,
yeah.
You know.
And Cowboy Jack passed, what, maybe two, I can't keep track of time, maybe 2 years ago?
4 years
Four
ago.
4 years, that long ago.
I was like, his motto was, we're in the fun business here. If we're not having fun, what's the point of even doing it?
Like our radio show here. Right?
Yeah, well, Billy? Everything should be that way, you know, it's like... That's a great cred. You know?
And what happened to the house? What's the status of it now? Is
well,
it still there?
They sold it. A company, I think they're kind of connected with CMA, but they're going to still have the studio open and running. You can still book time there. And they kept pretty much everything intact. You know, he had a bad fire there about 4 years before he passed away. And they lost quite a few master tapes, you know.
You know who he had on the show was Matt. They found his final tapes, and they found him in the fire. I can't remember his name, Matt Erzy or something, Nashville singer-songwriter. And they did a record. It was like one of the last projects that we worked on before that fire.
Oh, I can't think of his name.
Yeah, right.
It kind of rings a bell.
So it's still there.
I just got a lot of good memories of that place, you know. Yeah. I remember one day I stopped by in the late afternoon, and I had a little Jack Daniels with me, and Jack was hanging out with, I don't know if you ever heard of a pop singer named Frank Ifield.
Oh, yeah, I remember you.
Huge.
That was a big hit. I got that 45. It's on VJ. I remember you.
Him and Paul McCartney dated the same woman, but he dated her before Paul did.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, we had a few drinks and went out and had lunch and ran into Conway Twitty. That's when Nashville was a lot smaller and you could just, like, run into all kinds of people. But it's a lot bigger and a lot different now. You know,
so you're in town, and tell us, you've got some stuff coming up. I know you've got a show at Fitzgerald's.
I'm playing Fitzgerald's on Saturday night, the 4th. The Bad Examples are doing a 30th anniversary show. And they asked us to open for them. But it turns out now that they're opening first and then we're playing last.
So okay. Oh, yeah.
It'd be good to see Ralph Covert and those guys. I haven't seen them in a while. And I think we're going to have a pretty good crowd down there, you know?
It's Bill's birthday.
Is it?
I don't know if he'll be in town, but that's Bill's birthday.
I hope he is.
Because I remember that because it's the same birthday as my nephew down in Nashville.
That's
November 4th.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
What's your band going to be like?
It's a Illinois band, I call it. You know, most of the guys are out west, like Oswego, Morris. Whenever I gig up here, that's the band I use. You know, I don't have a big enough budget from the record company to carry a tour bus and a band. I can't keep them on salary. I can barely make enough to keep myself going. But it's all good fun. And they're good bunch of guys. We were up here beginning of September. I played at a place out in Union, Illinois, where the train museum is.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful place called Claus and Tavern.
I've heard of that,
but
I've never been there.
People just converge on this place, like families, bikers, all every type of person in the world. And we had a good time. We played out back, so that was fun, you know.
And I know you're working on a new record with another person who's been on our show, Michael, who did the Charlie Rich stuff. Talk
Michael
about that.
Said yeah. to say hello yeah. to you. Yeah, yeah we're going in the studio next Thursday. We're going to lay down some tracks. We're using the Butcher Shop studio at my brother's part. You know,
you've recorded there before.
I've recorded there a few times. It's a great place. It's like a big bunker.
Yeah, tell us about it. I mean, it's an old.
The meatpacking plant, it's the offices of the old meatpacking plant, and it's this huge basement. And it kind of reminds me of pictures you've seen of the house where the Stones recorded Exile on Main Street. It's got like that bunker-type feel to it. Like your underground basement, but it's a huge room. Drums, great drum room. Drums sound incredible down there. Okay. So we're going to do an EP. Michael's going to produce it. And it's really funny how we ran into each other.
Okay, hold that. We got to take a break for some commercials. And then we're going to be back with more Billy Prine on WGN. Dave Hoekstra sitting in for the download.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky where my parents were born. There's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
times we'd travel on down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Adria Hill, where the air smelled like snakes. We'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all that we'd kill.
And Danny, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lays? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Then the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber, and they stripped all the land. They dug for the coal, but the land was forsaken, and they wrote it all down as the progress of man.
And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay?
Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking.
Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. When I die, let my ashes float down the Green River. Let my soul float on up to the Rochester Dam. I'll be halfway to heaven with paradise awaiting, just 5 miles away from wherever I am.
And Danny, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lays? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train is hauled it away. Mr. Peabody's coal train is hauled it away.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal. Dave Hoekstra sitting in for Justin Hoffman. That's Billy Prine. That's David Prine. And on the phone is John Prine. How you doing, John?
Good, Dave. How you doing?
Doing okay. Kind of wanted to do this around David's 80th birthday, which is, it was November 2nd, and there's a song of yours, and I never heard a version of that song quite like that. Can you talk about family singing? And I mean, did you guys sing around the house? I know you sing at reunions, but talk about the power of family singing.
Take it away. Well, we all started singing together pretty early on. Dave taught me how to play guitar, so I could accompany him when he was teaching himself how to play fiddle. And Billy's played guitar ever since I could remember.
Three chords, bud. It's all you need.
That's it. You need a minor chord in case something bad happens.
Yeah, you know, once in a while, some of them weird ones. Three will do it mostly.
And back in the day, we used to go in the backyard on First Avenue, and our dad would be right in the middle conducting all three of us.
Really? Conducting?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How would he conduct? Like, was
just
it...
like, you know, you need to go up a little bit more. You need to go down a little bit more and, you know, play it like this, you know, and do that Hank Williams song, John. And
our dad conducted was volume.
That's right.
I learned at one point how to play fingerstyle guitar like Merle Travis, and I played it for the old man because I thought I'd really blow him away. And he said, too many notes.
I want to tell the listeners, I mean, was he a tough critic? I mean, he was, you know, former president of the United Steelworkers Union. Was he a tough critic of the music, or was he supportive? I mean, how did he move you along? I know he was a music fan.
He loved to play the jukebox, and he loved to listen to country radio. he'd set his radio up in our kitchen with a quart of beer, and he'd catch the country music every night on there, and we'd listen to it whether we wanted to or not, and most of the time we did because it was all good stuff then.
There used to be this country bar called Flippo's out in Bellwood, and they had a great, great jukebox, and that was my dad's hangout. And
Flippo's?
Yeah, Flippo's. I went to school with the guy's grandson, Grandy, but I had this big Sun amp, and I hooked up my stereo to it. And one day I came home from school, and my dad was in my room listening to Jerry Lee Lewis. He loved the Jerry Lee Lewis country records and having a beer, and he goes, "Man, this is just like Flippo's, except it don't cost anything."
What was Joe's Village in? John, did you go there? That was a didn't they have country western on that jukebox?
Oh yeah, no, they had a good jukebox at the old Village Inn across from the Bluebird.
Yeah,
that was a really good jukebox in there.
Good barbecue too.
Yeah,
and the coldest Budweiser in town.
Yeah.
You had to know that if the bartender knew you by name, you were in. You were solid. I had to do a show over there and sell more liquor than they ever sold before. All of a sudden, the bartender knew my name then.
How'd your parents? How did your parents meet? I've never asked you guys that. How did they meet?
Dave,
I'm not sure.
Okay. They were related through marriage. Okay, my dad's uncle married my mother's aunt, so I think they knew each other through family.
Smith and Ham.
Smith and Ham, right? Yeah. And I think they kind of knew each other that way. I never got the full details though, how they really formally met or anything. You know,
Dad told me once though how he funded his courtship. Because he was up here in Chicago at that point, and she was down in Paradise in Kentucky. And it's a dry county, like most of Kentucky was then. He says, I'd go out and buy me a case of cheap half pints and hop in his Model A and go to Kentucky. So the old man made his living bootlegging.
He was a bootlegger before he became a machinist.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes afterwards. Sometimes.
Okay, we got to take a quick break for some commercial on WGN.
Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one. Well, I might take a train, I might take a plane. If I gotta walk, I'm gonna get there just the same. I'm going to Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one. I'll be staying on the corner, 12th Street and Vine. I'll be staying on the corner, 12th Street and Vine. With my Kansas City baby and my bottle of Kansas City wine. With my Kansas City baby and my bottle of Kansas City wine. That's for you, baby doll.
Mr. Billy Prine on WGN in Chicago with David Prine and John Prine on the phone from Nashville. Thanks for joining us, John.
You're welcome, Dave.
And tell us, I haven't talked to you since your book came out, so tell us a little about John Prine Beyond Words, a little bit of everything in here, songs, stories, lots of good pictures. How did this come about?
Yeah, we were thinking about putting, this was a while back, wanted to put out a good songbook because there hasn't been one since, I think Warner Brothers put one out early on. And they started picking the songs and they had all these great photos, so I started writing a little something about each song, And I didn't want to make a standard songbook where you had to learn how to read music, because I don't know how to read music. Or, you know, I just put the chords above the words, and I figured anybody that liked my songs might want to know what key I play them in, and they could easily pick up the song just by playing the right chords. And it all came together, and there was more stories than I thought, so we turned it into an actual book.
And it's available at Old Boy Records and I'm sure bookstores and Amazon and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's there's some great pictures, and with all the brothers in the studio at the same time, I'm looking at the gymnast picture here. And I would just want to read this, and you guys can all talk about this since you're all together. And this is John. Anything my brothers did, I thought, that's my brother, I can do that too. Doug, we'll talk about Doug in a minute. Doug was a gymnast, so I had to become one. When I saw Dave playing the guitar, I learned it. I had no natural ability at either thing, but if I could picture myself doing it, I could do it if I put enough work into it. That's why I said if my dad liked ballet, I would have been Rudolf Nureyev. Shoo, I'm glad I didn't like ballet. But four boys and growing up and stuff, how did you guys all, what was the flotsam and jetsam in the family out there in the western suburbs?
Well,
go ahead.
Okay, well, by the time I started becoming age, Dave got married when I was four. Doug was in the Air Force. So it was just me and John. And then, you know, I pretty much had to run at a house when John went in the Army in 66. So I had it made, you know. But, you know, I remember John had the first electric guitar in the house. And he used to let me, you know, play it. And
how'd that happen, John? How'd you get the first electric guitar in the house?
It might have been my first guitar, just like the way the amp looked. And somebody sold the guitar and amp together. You know, their kid wanted to learn how and ended up in the closet.
And then
I think I bought it off somebody off my paper route.
Yeah, I think you did. And then when you went in the Army, I used it all the time because I didn't want it to collect dust or anything. I didn't want to take good care of it.
You used another one of my guitars, Billy, when I was in the Army.
Yeah, that's the one that Dad and I wanted a pickup put on it, and he drilled two holes in it. And forever ruined the value of that beautiful silver tone guitar.
he sanded the paint off it, Dave, and painted it purple and nailed a pickup into it.
Oh, I did the sanding. Dad just did the electrical work.
Was that the blue one?
Yeah, that was the blue one. Yeah,
oh, cool Rooney.
Beautiful guitar.
It cost $35 from the Sears catalog. And I had to pay $450 to have the thing brought back to its original sheen, you know?
Well, I figured since you had a Gibson Hummingbird at that point, you didn't really care about that guitar too much anymore, but I was wrong.
You were wrong. So that one was your fault.
What about musical? I mean, I don't know. I can't do the math in my head, but with the age group of the four boys growing up, how did musical influences? I mean, like John, I remember reading that maybe you saw Ray Charles in 62 at the Erie Crown Theater, and then here comes Billy, the youngest, seeing the Stones at the old Erie Crown Theater. So were there separate record collections? Did you guys influence each other on musical taste, or did you all go your own way?
I think we pretty much went our own way.
Yeah.
You know, I was the first music I really listened to and really got into was early New Orleans jazz.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere at a pawn shop, I think, I found a one-valve drum and bugle corps bugle. And so I was going to be Bix.
Right. Fortunately, right, I remember that too.
Fortunately, the lip went real fast. She's still Pat's here sitting behind me, and one of our early dates, I thought I'd be real cool, and we were running down the street in a car, and I leaned out the window and blew the cavalry charge. And she stuck with me for some reason.
That's a great start. How long? I want to give her props. She's here. How long you been married?
We will be 60 years in January.
Oh, congratulations.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yay.
I remember Dave having a stereo before there were stereo records. He belted from parts down at, what was that store, the hi-fi store?
Yeah.
They bought the parts, and, I mean, all they had in stereo was, like, ping pong games and a freight train going from one speaker to another.
Yeah. That was in the same period that I was into ham radio.
Oh, you were?
Yeah,
right.
And I had a pretty good receiver and a big antenna. And so if I put it on AM broadcast band, I could get, you know, Mexico and all these places. So I'd be on a Saturday night, I'd be down there tapping the key to somebody, and the old man had come down in the basement and demand I quit this nonsense and get the WSM for him, because my radio got it better than anything in the whole house, right? So that was my strong exposure to country music.
Yeah.
Although I did grow up, they had a whole pile of 78s with Carter Family and Roy Acuff and a lot of the good early stuff on it. And at the time, I tolerated it. And then somewhere later downstream, I got bit by the bug. I think it was the New Lost City Ramblers that did it to me. And for that point, I figured, geez, that's what I want to do.
And you've been very loyal to it. After the news break, we're going to play something off the Blue Eagle String Band record.
Yeah.
You stuck with this.
Yeah, and I remember John and Doug had a great 45 collection, and John turned me on to Buddy Holly. He had a Buddy Holly album with Old Boy on it,
uh-huh.
And I just thought it was like the greatest thing I heard. I was only 4 years old. And then I played tuba like 4 years later. I was like a child prodigy. I used to take my tuba to practice in a red wagon and pull it. And kids used to throw rocks at me and stuff.
Where was that at?
This is in Maywood. This is in Maywood. And then when the Beatles and the Invasion hit, you know, I threw away the tuba for a guitar because David had already been playing guitar and John was playing guitar. And I said, I don't want to play tuba anymore.
They gave you all your personality, though.
That's right. That's right.
My daughter, Ann, you scared the daylights out of her.
She used
with
to go running
tuba.
Out of the house screaming when I played the tuba. It scared her completely out of her wits. She hated that thing.
Verna Valentine Cottonham Prine. What was it like for her to raise four boys and a husband? I've read a little bit about her cooking. I guess roast beef hash was like a go-to meal. Before we break for the news, talk about your food memories with your mom.
Best cornbread in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been trying to figure it out. And
best pot roast,
even close.
Fried chicken, gravy, everything. I mean, just, it was everything was made from scratch. She learned from her father. Really, really good country food,
No cookbook. She just kind of tasted.
No.
Yeah.
She kept a big can of bacon grease, and she put a little bacon grease in everything she cooked. She claimed that's where all the taste came from. I remember I got a flat top haircut when I was about 12. I was trying to figure a way to keep the hair standing up, and I put bacon grease on my head. I came home that day, and Mom said she could smell me. I smelled like breakfast coming down the street.
We were sitting around the dinner table, and I'm thinking, Mom didn't cook any bacon tonight. What's going on? It was like a hot summer night, and this aroma of bacon was coming.
Hey, that's the magic southern ingredient.
Smell like breakfast coming down the street. That's very good. Can you? We're going to do one quick last segment. Can you hang on for about another 10 minutes, John?
Sure.
Okay, all right, we're going to take a break for the news, and we're coming to wrap it up with John, Billy, and David Prine. This is great, so don't go away on WGN.
This is an old Grandpa Jones song, 8 More Miles to Louisville, and my Kentucky cousins love this song. Maybe there's a couple of them listening to it. Traveled o'er this country wide, seeking fortune fair. Up and down both coastlines, I've been everywhere. Portland east, Portland west, and back along the line. Well, I'm going to the place that's best, that old hometown of mine.
8 more miles and Louisville will come into the view. 8 more miles on this old road, I'll never more be blue. Well, I knew someday I'd come back, yes, I knew it from the start. 8 more miles to Louisville, the hometown of my heart. Well, I know you've got a gal somewhere that you like best of all. Mine lives down in Louisville, she's long and she is tall. Not the kind you will find just traveling through the land. I'm on my way this very day to win her heart and hand. 8 more miles to Louisville will come into my view. 8 more miles on this old road, I'll never more be blue. I knew someday I'd come back, yes, I knew it from the start. 8 more miles to Louisville, the hometown of my heart.
Hot dog.
That old favorite.
Welcome back to WGN. Dave Hoekstra sitting in for Justin Kaufman, and that's David Prine. Happy 80th birthday, Mr. Prine.
Thank you, sir.
And that's 8 more miles to Louisville from the CD, the Blue Eagle String Band. We do our part. Also in the studio, Billy Prine, and on the phone, John Prine from Nashville. So, John, we're all talking here in the studio. That's a big call at the family reunion in Kentucky.
That song we just heard?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You bet. They make Dave do that two or three times every time we play.
Yeah.
Well, it was my cousin Jerry's favorite song, and he passed away, and we sort of did a little informal thing in the restaurant, and I sang it for him, and from that point on, it's just been
it's
locked in, you know. It's one of my favorite songs.
Your chops are great, David.
He can play, can he? I told you he could play.
Yeah. You play every, I mean, you practice? Do you play a lot?
Yeah. We don't, we sort of quit gigging. It got to be too hard to get around. Besides that, if you listen to that record, you'll know we're not in it for the money.
And where can people find the record, Dave?
They can get it directly from Oh Boy. They can also get it from either iTunes or Amazon. At least they could.
Okay. Baby Rose and Peggy. Oh, wow. This is great stuff. Keep on the Sunny Side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Billy, you've got a gig coming up at Fitzgerald's.
Fitzgerald's, Saturday night with the Bad Examples. It's good to be back at Fitzgerald's. I try to do it on a yearly basis. I hope now the place is for sale. Somebody buys it and keeps it going. So we'll be out there Saturday night. We go on at 11. So come on out. Rock and roll.
And John, the book's doing fine. People can find it everywhere.
That's right.
And do you have any dates in the Midwest for our listeners coming up, like around the holidays or early next year or anything, John?
Any shows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're not going to get up to Chicago or Wisconsin, Milwaukee or anything until probably mid-April.
Okay. All right.
We're taking it easy first couple of months and then hitting the road in March.
Now, we were looking at the book here during one of the breaks, and we were talking, and I remember this place driving by. I'm sure I didn't hang out there like you guys did, but talk about Skip's Frozen Custard, John. I'm looking here at the double truck, page 56. I don't even know. Where did you find that picture? It's a great picture.
I'm not sure. We found it was a fan that sent in a picture of Skip's before they leveled it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's enough there so I can remember how it looked in its glory. You know, that was the first job I ever had when I was 14, and I got paid 50 cents for an hour to scrub custard off of the parking lot. That's the place I got. The guy caught me running from a swarm of bees, and he fired me.
And then I remember Dad took you and me to a Cubs game that afternoon, John.
That afternoon?
Yeah, the same day they let you go.
We did several of those.
It cheered me right up.
That's right. Dad wanted to cheer you up. He didn't want you to be too sad.
Skip was in Melrose Park?
Yeah.
Right? Melrose Park?
Huge place.
You were saying there was drag racing there,
Billy? Yeah. I heard it was exactly a quarter mile from the exit to the light at Thatcher Road. And,
Skips was unincorporated. It wasn't Melrose, and it wasn't Elmwood Park. It was just the quarter mile from First Avenue to Thatcher Road. It was exactly a quarter of a mile, and only state cops could come and bust you along there. So people used to bring sometimes dragsters down there on trailers and run them on late Saturday night.
Now, John, how old were you when you got canned from Skips?
14.
14. Now, you wrote a song about it. We've talked before. You're like a journalist. I mean, your style of, you're like a reporter. You know, you have all these details. I mean, so that happened when you were 14. I mean, where'd you pull the song out of? I mean, you didn't write it right away. Did you do it later?
No, I wrote the song for the Bruised Orange album.
Yeah, right.
I wrote the song in 78. I worked at Skips in 62. It takes a while for something to come around and get into a song for me.
You're probably pretty scarred by that incident, so it took a while to get over it.
It did. Yeah. I was emotionally scarred. It made me into a songwriter.
In the little time, we got maybe one or two minutes left, but I want to just pay homage to Doug. Can you just talk about Doug and his role in the family? You lost him a few years. I want to talk about Doug.
Billy, well, he was, you know, great guy. Never met a stranger. Making you happy was the most important thing in his life. And, you know, great guy, Chicago policeman for 35 years. Sure. He was a lieutenant. And didn't play music, but he loved it. Great dancer. Just, we miss him a lot. We really do. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. He threw
whenever all the brothers were at a show of mine, and Doug was there too. Instead of singing, Doug would come up and dance for his solo on Paradise.
He threw a 70th birthday
to his own
party.
Particular music.
I think he got a couple encores, John, didn't he?
He did too. He's very memorable. No, Doug was great. We loved him.
Yeah. You guys are great. Thank you so much. Thanks for calling in, John. Thank you guys for coming. Is this the first time all three Prime Brothers have been on the, at least on WGN?
Yeah.
Your mom was a WGN fan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, my mom used to listen to WGN on her transistor radio so she could go to sleep at night. You know,
lots of people doing that right
nothing
now.
Nothing against the programming or anything.
thank you so much. This is great. And good luck in all your projects. Happy birthday, Dave Pride.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to be back with more Nocturnal Journal after the commercials.